You're listening to Seminary Dropout, and I'm your host, Shane Blackshear. In cooperation with MissioAlliance.org, straight from my house in Austin, Texas to yours, interviews with leading Christian authors, leaders, and thinkers, because good theology should be for everyone. This is Seminary Dropout. Let's go! My guest is Mary DeMuth. She's an author and speaker and a longtime friend of the show by now. Mary, thanks for being back.
Hey, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
No problem. I think this is number 3 for you on the show.
I've been around the block a little bit. Yeah.
I think you and Scott McKnight hold the title for a number of visits.
So, wow, that's good company. I'm humbled.
Well, I'm humbled that you would come on so many times. Thanks for being back. So last time you were here, we were talking about Not Marked. It had just come out. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about what you've been up to since then.
Yeah, I think I wrote a couple more books in between there. And then my most recent one was called Worth Living, How God's Wild Love for You Makes You Worthy. So that was fun. And then I rebranded my website. It was Live Uncaged for a really long time, and now it's Restory. And so that kind of prompted me to start a conference in September. Last September was the first time, and we had it here in Rockwall, Texas, and it went really well, the Restory Conference. I'm going to have another one coming up. I've got a new podcast called The Restory Show, and that has been going great. I've been having some fun guests on there of people, just random people that aren't necessarily famous or anybody knows at all, but they're just folks with amazing stories. And so that's kind of what I'm doing. I also started a website called booklaunchmentor.com, where I'm mentoring authors toward publication and helping them get their words out there and marketing and all that kind of stuff. So I have been a little bit busy now that I have reflected on it while I'm speaking to you right now.
No kidding. You know, I noticed you mentioned the website changed, the rebranding, and then you used to have the Uncaged podcast as well. And so, you know, you got the Restory. What, you know, I guess that kind of reflects just a change in direction in the kind of things that you're talking about and discussing. What brought all that on?
Yeah, so it really, I think, as an author and just as a human, things evolve in your life. And when I first started the branding journey, I was like, I had the brand Turning Trials to Triumph, which never quite fit me right. Someone else came up with it, which was part of the problem. And I liked the idea. I didn't really like the word trials, and I didn't like the word triumph. So that didn't really fit very well. And then after talking to my audience for a long time, Live Uncaged, again, no one said those words to me, but I just pulled them to see what kind of things came up when they thought of me. And one day Live Uncaged came to me. And then 2 summers ago, I was feeling kind of frustrated by the growth that God had wrought in me. And there was more of a so what to my story. So the idea of being uncaged connotes freedom. Like, you're out there, you're not in your cage anymore, and you're flying around. But there was a so what to my story, and I wanted to communicate with audiences also what had transformed in my heart, that God had changed me in a revolutionary way, but I needed to do something with it. And he doesn't just change us, but he also allows some of our tragedy and our trauma to become our superpower. And then that's the way we help others in the kingdom and outside the kingdom as well. And so Restory kind of had a more forward momentum feel to it, that we are given a new story, or we are restoried from the past so that we can be bearers of new stories to a new generation and help others just kind of discover what it is that, you know, what their superpower is. And oftentimes that superpower comes from our deepest wounds.
You've been doing the platform thing a lot longer than I have, but I know for me, when I first started out, I thought I was going to be kind of talking in one direction. And a lot of that was kind of looking around, seeing what other people were good at doing. But then as time went by, kind of realizing that that didn't fit me. And the longer you do it, the longer you, whatever it is, blog or podcast, it seems like you kind of can't help it over time to discover what your own voice is. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that was kind of part of what you were just talking about?
I do, and I would highly encourage people to not give in to the culture around them in terms of branding and platform, because we're all so wildly different. And I would agree that my voice is more distinct as I get older, and I understand it more, and I fight for it more because I know what is the difference between my voice and another voice. And the longer I've written, and the longer I've podcasted, and the longer I've blogged, I guess it's more, you're more and more comfortable in your own literary skin. And so for those out there who are kind of wondering about that, I do think there can be a place for imitation and mimicry, like trying on a style for size. But it also can, it's a fun exercise to do, but it's not, doesn't have longevity, because ultimately there's only one you in the world, and you've got to bring your specific message to the world. And if you're trying to copycat somebody else, it's going to fall flat, and ultimately it's going to harm you in the process. And for me, part of it too was just realizing that I'm not the same person I was 5 years ago. And I think that's part of it too. Like, we get stuck in a branding mode and we think, well, this is what we're going to be forever and eternity. But yet then God like changes us, and sometimes our branding and our message has to morph with that change.
You talked a little bit about the Restory podcast. You said it was, just ordinary people. And I looked through the list, and some of those names I recognized. And then some are recognized because everybody knows them. I think you had like Sarah Bessie on one episode. And then some I recognize just because you and I are kind of in the same world. So, lesser known names, but, and then some I just didn't know at all. What did you talk about just the format of the show? Do you ask the same questions to every guest, or do you tailor it to who they are?
It kind of evolved just like we've been talking about. But the basics of it is the same. I'll ask a guest to kind of give me their background story, just kind of like, how many kids do you have if you have them, and what do you do? And, kind of like the small talk that you would have at a party. And then I ask them to share a story that they want to share. And I usually do not know what that story is going to be. And so when it comes on, it is completely fresh to me and a complete surprise. And so then we just unpack that story together. And then I ask two clarifying questions at the end. I ask them what kind of advice they would give to someone who had a similar story. And then I ask them how God has specifically restoried them in the past year, because a lot of times those stories aren't from last year. And it's just fun to hear how God is transforming people recently. So that's the format of the show, and it usually lasts between 30 and 60 minutes, depending on the loquaciousness or the long-windedness of my guest.
I just can't imagine the stories that you've heard, for the first time on the show. Are you ever taken aback by some of those? And do you sometimes have a hard time knowing how to respond?
Yeah, in fact, I just interviewed someone that the show will go live in a couple weeks, and she had a very, I had no idea what she was going to share. I don't know her very well. So she had lost a parent a month ago.
Oh my
And
goodness. Wow.
so, wow, was that fresh? And it was really raw, but we ended up having a really great conversation. And another story that was on the show that was just, oh, it was hard. It was a man who's a pastor of a church. He inherited a church from his father. And he one day was sitting in his office, and two girls came into the office, and they were like older teens or early 20s, and they were both crying, and they just kind of passed a piece of paper across a desk to him. And it was their email exchange about how his father had sexually abused them.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And so then his story is how he had to turn in his father,
Oh my
who had
goodness.
been the pastor of the church that he was now pastoring, and there were probably hundreds of victims. This was the
Oh my
beginning of it.
goodness.
And he's in prison, the father's in prison now. But how brave and how awful that story, and how redemptive and amazing that story was. But wow.
Well, all the time we hear stories about people who were throwing those stories under the rug of people in their own church without the relationship of it being your own flesh and blood. It's so obviously the right thing to do, but just another layer of complexity there.
Yeah, and his first words out of his mouth were stunning to me. He said to those girls, he said, I might lose my church. I might lose my job. I might lose my house. I may lose my extended family, but I will do whatever it takes to make this right by you. And 2 days later, he was in the police plate, you know, in the with the police turning his father in.
That is just wow.
I know. So crazy. So if people want to look that episode up, it's Jimmy Hinton is the guy's name. And I'm sure he's one of the ones you didn't know who he was, but what a story.
Yeah. Wow. So I wonder, you had a really good following before you ever started podcasting. I wonder what you thought, and we mentioned before, you had the Uncaged podcast before, mm-hmm. but what you thought the element of podcasting was going to bring to what you were already doing.
Well, I did do the Uncaged podcast, and it was me being a talking head, which I liked for a period of time because I like to talk, blah, blah, blah. no surprise there. But I felt like it was becoming stale, and I got tired of hearing myself talk after a while. And so I quit it for about, I was not podcasting for about a year, year and a half. And then when this Restory idea came to me, it almost was that the podcast came to me before anything else. Because I just was so passionate about hearing everybody else's story. And I think about how I grow in my relationship with God, and it's almost always been, and maybe it's just because I'm a storyteller and I'm biased that way, but it has almost always been through the power of hearing other people's stories and just being inspired by them and doing life with people and tethering out their stories and understanding and teasing them out and trying to find, you know, what the nugget is there. And I just find people fascinating. And so, you know, I had to rebuild an audience, and that was, you know, I'm still working on that. But more than that, I really wanted people out in the world to hear these stories of faithful people. And again, there are some people that have books, but most of them are not well known. And that's kind of been the goal of the whole thing.
You mentioned, you know, your first one, you were the only voice on the podcast. I don't know how people do that at all.
Either.
When I had the kernel of the idea of doing a podcast, it being just me was never on the table. Because I can't imagine, you know, filling up that time and me talking. And I listen to podcasts like that. There are people who do it well, but
oh yeah,
I couldn't do it.
I do much better when I'm feeding off somebody else and I'm bantering back and forth with someone. And there's just something so radio-ish about it and conversational. And so, yeah, I think I'm a much better podcaster now that I'm interviewing people than when I was a talking head. So I'm excited about that.
You know, one of the things that when you and I were emailing before, you mentioned you had been thinking a lot lately about celebrity Christianity. Mm-hmm. What brought that about?
I've been kind of bothered by it for a long time. And part of that is just my unique space that I occupy. And you're floating around in that space too, so you can resonate with this as well. But I've been around writing books since the mid-2000s, and so I've been in the writing industry for a long time, and so I've had kind of a backseat to see some of my peers, fly on private jets and charge a whole lot of money for their speaking events and become prima donnas and ask for specific things in green rooms and become so unapproachable that no one can ever say anything negative to them because they've surrounded themselves by yes men. And I think it's just so dangerous. And I think it's dangerous on two accounts. It's dangerous for the person because fame will corrupt anybody. And it will impoverish the soul, but it's also not good for people out there in listening land and reading land who flock to a guru without first flocking to Jesus. And ultimately those gurus are going to fail somehow. And then if all your faith has been placed in someone famous, then there could be that option of becoming very disillusioned with the church, and it happens all the time. So I don't even need to preach about it, but I think that's what I see that troubles me.
This seems to be kind of two parts of that. And one of those is people becoming very ungrounded and, making probably more money than they should. And there would be people who are really offended that I would even say such a thing, but maybe I should say asking for more money than they should and then spending it on things they probably shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And, but the other side of that is the other thing you said, which is they put themselves up on this pedestal. And so people stop questioning and just take what they say for granted. And so I think one of those things you have a little more control over than the other. And I wonder if that's something that you've thought about a lot as you go and you speak and you write.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I have been thinking about since the moment I had my first article published. And I had an experience before I went to my first major Christian Writers Conference in 2004. It actually was. I'm going to be teaching at its Mount Hermon Christian Writers Conference. I'll be teaching there in a couple weeks. But I went to my first one, and as I was going there, I just kind of had this vision, which I normally, that's not something I typically have, but like all of a sudden, like my whole life kind of flashed before my eyes, and I got to see kind of all the trials that I had endured. And I said to the Lord, I said, gosh, I've gone through a lot of stuff. And he said, yes, you have withstood many trials, but will you withstand the trial of notoriety? And this was prior to having an agent, prior to having a contract. And that those words, will you withstand the trial of notoriety, just kind of circled around in my mind. And I got to the conference and Randy Alcorn, who's a veteran writer and speaker, was speaking. And he encouraged us to look at fame as an avenue of service. So any fame that comes my way is more opportunity for me to humble myself and to wash more feet. And that stuck with me throughout all of this time. And another thing he encouraged us to do was to create a prayer team for our ministry. And I have done that since that moment. So I've had a prayer team since 2004. And I have given those, now it's up to about 70 people, I have given them the go-ahead and the please do this to call me into account if I get too big for my britches. And then, of course, I'm married, so my husband will also do that as well. And my kids do that as well. They're grown up, and they'll call me on the carpet. So I'm not too big for my britches because of them. But those are a couple things that I've been kind of worried about since a long time ago. And so it's something that's kind of circulated in my head for a while now.
That's got to require a lot of trust to be able to tell a group of people, especially a group of people, 70 people large, that they have that. You give them that authority to speak into your life.
I do. And I'm grateful because there's been some good correction, and just having those relationships of prayer has been so, so, so helpful over the years.
One of the things that you've been on this podcast talk about before that's a big part of your past and also what you write about and help other people with is sexual abuse and people who've had that in their past. And I wonder if the reason that you, or part of the reason why you've always had an eye on Christian celebrity is because that there is often a sort of connection there.
Yeah. I'm highly sensitive to exploitive people. And when people, no matter if they're a minister or what, like whatever kind of platform they have, if they become too big for their own good, they can start to oppress and hurt people. And that just makes me really sad. And so that's probably, you're right. I think there is a connection there of, I have a heart for victims. And so when I see perpetrators getting bigger and bigger. And as you said earlier in the podcast, you said, wow, you know, people don't usually turn in perpetrators, especially if they're not, if they're your flesh and blood or they're in your church or whatever. It's the fallback for all of us to be quiet. And so those perpetrators tend to keep going. And that's why you get things like, you hear about missionary kids going to missionary schools in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s and completely being decimated in those missionary schools. And one person tips it off and then suddenly there's thousands of victims. Or you hear about a cult leader who, you know, was able to perform his duties for, you know, 20 years and then something comes out, one brave person stands up and suddenly we find out that there's hundreds of victims of that person too. And And so I guess that shows the power of one person's voice, which is amazing, but it also shows the secretive nature of power and how we need to be super careful about people in power who seem to want that power and control as well.
And it seems like it comes from both sides, where you mention, you know, people protecting those people because that's their, you know, that's their pope, you know,
yeah.
in their circle. And so they want to protect them. And also for the perpetrator, it seems like they get this idea that they are untouchable and that they can act with impunity a lot of times.
Yeah. And oddly, because we are a church of grace, you're seeing a lot of that these days. You're seeing disgraced ministers who have done some pretty predatory things or even illegal things or underhanded things, and then 3 months later declaring they're all fine and they're back in ministry. And it's as if, and we have like no memory of it, and it's as if nothing happened. There's no like restoration or time away or anything. It's like, it's almost as if ministry has become idolatry to some. And that makes me really sad because that has nothing to do with ministry. Ministry is about service. It's not about ego, but oftentimes it can be about ego.
Yeah, it is fascinating to see someone thinks they can go through some sort of counseling or, you know, 12-step plan and turn it around. And, you know, people could have conversations about what that proper time looks like, or if there's any amount of time where someone could come back. But it is shocking how people come back, and you get the idea that they had that plan the second that they were caught in their sin too.
Yeah, it was like this exit plan that they had written down one time. If in case I get caught, this exactly. is how I'm going to come back and make a comeback, and it's going to be awesome. And one thing that has helped me is reading about predators and people with this, like sociopaths. One of the books is A Sociopath Next Door that was fascinating to me. And one of the things that I found interesting was that a lot of sociopaths can cycle through several different types of friends. They can move. They can move from one ministry or one thing to another until they reach their like late 50s and early 60s. And at that point, they've been found out so many times that at that point, everything's over. And so when I get frustrated, like, you know, at this 45-year-old or this 38-year-old who's seeming to be able to reinvent him or herself over and over and over again, I remember that book and think, first of all, it can't go on forever. And second of all, God sees all that. So I'm really grateful that no one's going to pull the wool over the Lord's eyes. He's holy and almighty, and he knows all those things. But also just in human terms, it will cycle out and it won't be one of those things that continues on forever.
Are you working on a book right now? You're writing all the time, I should say, it seems like.
I am working on a difficult memoir about trauma, and I don't have a publisher for it, so I'm working on spec for it. But I recently had this experience where I went back to the place where I was sexually abused. That was in December of this year. And so I actually, one of the Restory Show 3-1, which is the third season, first one, you can listen to what that was like. And that was a pretty raw episode. That was the one time I was just speaking to for myself because it was such a raw story. But I'm kind of writing about what is it like to go back to the place of trauma and how do you heal from trauma and stuff like that.
I mean, what people should know, you come out with a spiritual memoir, Thin Places, it's been out for a while now.
It has. And so this would be kind of a complimentary memoir to that, but a lot more deeper, if you can imagine, because Thin Places was like, blah, you know, everything of me on the page. But this is actually even harder to write because it's so raw. And it's, what do you do when you are dealing with PTSD and trauma, and how, you know, what about all the people with all their Christian platitudes about how you should just not be that way anymore, just don't think that way, or just memorize Bible verses? And it's not that simple. And I want to be able to set people free, not only who are going through trauma, but I want to give people who minister to others the tools to understand that when they meet a trauma victim, they might be out of their league in terms of counseling them. They may need to refer them to a specialized trauma therapist because it's so ingrained and it's so deep that some specific types of therapies are more necessary.
You said that you went back to the place that you experienced abuse back in December. I had a friend once who lost a son. The son was an adult when they passed. Mm. And the parents were, you know, went through horrible, horrible grief, as you would imagine. And they went back to, the son had had a motorcycle accident. And they went back to the scene of it. And they said that for them, they were surprised at how that, for some reason, didn't really affect them in the way they thought it would. And they were surprised by their own reaction. Of course, you know, people react to those different things in very different ways. There's no right and wrong way.
Sure.
Did that affect you in the way you thought it would?
You know, it's really interesting you ask that, because as we were driving there, and you know, this was where I grew up in the Seattle area. And so I had lived there in Seattle until I was in my 30s. So 30 years of being there, I had avoided that place for 25 years. You know, it's weird. That I had never gone back. And so here I was as an adult driving back to a place where I had a lot of access to. I just didn't go back. And I was really afraid on how it would be. But ironically, while I was walking the sidewalks of those memories, I was fine. And even in the woods where a lot of the bad things happen, and there were rumors that that particular park was so almost haunted, like just an evil place where murders and rapes had happened for years and years and years. And so I was fine. But then about 4 hours later, I got violently ill, and I threw up for like 12 hours straight. And so I'm pretty sure that was a delayed traumatic reaction, because there was no other real reason for me to do that. And so, like, what I thought I was fine, the delayed response was there was obviously something going on that was pretty violent in my soul.
Yeah.
So
that's so interesting how our consciously we think one thing is going on, but our subconscious and our bodies sometimes know otherwise.
Yeah, the body memory was very traumatic. And I was kind of thinking, I was patting myself on the back like, hey, I'm so over this and this was great. I took pictures of myself smiling in front of these terrible places, and my husband did actually. And then, you know, a few hours later, I was like, oh no, this is not good.
Wow. Do you think that you'll still, jumping subjects once again, you think you're still going to do the Restory podcast for a while?
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it, and it's been so life-giving just for me. Even if no one listens to it, I'm so fascinated by people's stories that I'm going to keep doing that. And we've got a conference coming up here in September, the Restory Conference. So a lot of the times, that's not just me speaking, but I bring in stories from other people, and a lot of times they're curated from guests on my show. So that's been kind of fun too. I just had someone who on the show who had grown up in a polygamous cult. And she's going to be one of the people who shares a story at the Restory Conference. So it's kind of like the moth story hour in that way, which is kind of cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
I think people don't realize like how, I don't know if difficult is the word, but involved it is just to publish a podcast, and especially on a regular basis. And you're in your third season. You've got 43 episodes published right now. And I don't know how many episodes you had of Uncaged before, but even...
Yeah, like 75 or 80.
Oh, that's amazing. I mean, people don't realize how incredibly rare that was. I think in the podcast world for a long time, there was a stat floating around that the average podcast lasted 7 episodes.
Yes, I remember hearing that.
And I have no problem doubting that at all. I mean, that's amazing that you've... just the consistency of it. I think that is the difficult thing.
It is. It's a lot of work. And for me, it costs money because I pay someone to engineer it. And so this is not something that, you know, this is something that takes from my bottom line, but I feel so strongly about it that I don't care. I'm just happy to provide the service. And, but yeah, it's so much work and scheduling, and then people drop off and you have to reschedule, just all those little petty things that you have to figure out. I'm sure you've had that experience as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's funny because I was supposed to, I mean, right now as we're talking, Seminary Dropout is on hiatus, and that was supposed to last just the month of December. And here we are. It's the beginning of March right now. And I think I'm going to relaunch at the end of March, start up again. But yeah, it is incredibly difficult. And when you think I'm going to be publishing this once a week forever, for indefinitely, yeah. It's kind of like, it can be a little suffocating to think about all that work yes. that's ahead. Do you separate yours into seasons? Do you take a break in between seasons, or why did you choose to organize them that way?
I think it caused it so that I could do that. And so when I have a season of 20, it gives me an excuse to take a month off or a few weeks off, or to bank some episodes so that I'm not like stressed out every week. I'm definitely one of those like type A that likes to have everything in a row. And so giving it seasons gives me time to bank a few so that I'm not like scrambling for the next week each week.
Yeah, that's pretty smart. I try to work at least like 4 episodes ahead, but can't mm-hmm. always do that. But
no,
it is difficult. But that was really smart doing the season thing. I like that. It's a good idea.
Maybe. Yeah, the last one was just like season one, season two, episode 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And now I'm doing, 1-1 and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, that's smart. Yeah. Well, real quick, let's go back and talk about the Restory Conference. Putting on a conference is a big deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's something I would love to do someday, but I'm not near organized or ready for something like that. Tell me, you're going to have the second one this year. Is that right?
Yes, I can't believe it, but yes, I'm crazy enough to do it again.
So what happens, what does a Restory Conference look like? What did the first one look like? And if that's going to be the same format as the one that's coming up this year?
Yeah, I think we are going to do the same format. It'll be different messages. I'll be the primary speaker, but in between my speaking, we'll have these other stories of people, which is really super fun. And there's worship. And the nice thing about this was I crowdfunded the conference before I did it. And then I partnered with my church. And so the lovely part of all that is that they were so great. And I had volunteers from church to help me. And I had administrative help from church. And so it was not me doing it all by myself, or it really would have been a disaster. I give all the props to all of them. And it's just a one day. It's a 9-1 morning on a Saturday, the 16th of September. So it's not tons of orchestration, and food is not involved other than snacks. So it wasn't too bad as long as I had all the help that I did. I think we ran about 250 people. My goal this year, Lord willing, is to fill up the venue. We have a huge church. It's Lake Point Church in Rockwall, Texas, and it seats, like 6,000 or 7,000 or whatever. But they have a smaller building for the youth that seats about 900, and that's where we're doing it. So I'm hoping to fill it up with 900 folks, and we'll see if that happens or not. And, my goal or my expertise is not in administration. I can do it, and because I'm enough type A that I'll make sure it's done right, but it's really not my gifting, so I have to have good people around me.
Well, that's brilliant to crowdfund it and then also to partner with your church. That I think people don't realize just the financial cost of conferences. I mean, when you're bringing people to speak, even if they're not asking for, audacious amounts of money, you still got to get them there. You still got to have a place for them to stay while they're there. Mm-hmm. All that stuff really adds up.
It does. And the weirdest and the most exciting part about the conference for me last year was that I had people weirdly from all over the world come. I had someone from New Zealand come. I had someone from the Ivory Coast come, and people from all over the United States. And so it was super shocking to me that people would actually come to this conference from a one-day conference from the other side of the world. It was so humbling.
That is so cool. Well, so when does registration start for this year's?
Yeah, we'll start on June 1st, and they can find it on marydemuth.com, and it will all be there.
That's great. And the conference is going to happen, did you say September?
Yeah, September 16th. Okay. It's a Saturday.
Well, we'll try to shoot out some Facebook posts and tweets and stuff like that. Well,
thank you.
Opens.
I appreciate that. That's nice.
Yeah, that'd be a great, just a great thing for people to go to. Well, yeah. Mary, thanks so much for coming back on the show. I always love talking with you. and we'll have to, we got to meet some face to face someday. We're like, you know, in Texas terms, we're super close to each other, a mere four hours away. So we'll have to make that happen sometime.
Yeah, I just need some more street tacos. So all I need to do is come your way, right?
We got them.
Every corner. They're the best.
Thanks for joining me for another episode of Seminary Dropout. Remember, you can find all the show notes for this show and all shows at shaneblackshear.com. Oh, and hey, have you ever thought about starting your very own podcast? I bet you have. And I think you should do it. In fact, I've created a course just for you to teach you everything that I've learned over the last couple of years producing Seminary Dropout. So if you're interested in podcasting and want to learn how, go check out my course. You can go there by typing in podcastingforeveryone.org. And you can get a special discount by typing in the discount code SeminaryDropout, all one word. That'll give you 25% off. So go check it out. If you have any questions, let me know. Okay. Thanks to those that left ratings and reviews on iTunes this week. Remember, that keeps the show front and center. Also, remember, you can find me on Twitter at @beardonabike. That's @beardonabike. Also, I'm on Facebook, facebook.com/ShaneBlackshear123. And remember that Seminary Dropout is listener supported. You can visit supportseminarydropout.com and press Become a Patron. Remember, this music you're listening to right now is by D.L. Rossi. You can find him online on iTunes and at dlrossi.com. All right, thanks again for joining me for another episode of Seminary Dropout. Stay tuned for next week's episode. Love you. Take care. Yeah,